I always hear people, it's like, you know, San Antonio has to win the championship this year, or Oklahoma has to win a championship, or the Clippers have to. Well, only one team's going to win, and I can guarantee you that. And having won it, I don't think people who haven't won it really understand how hard it is to win one. You have to have everything go your way, and you have to be playing better than good. You have to be playing great. And so it just takes that, but you just got to keep pounding at it and seeing, you know, where you can go. And that's where we're at. That's where San Antonio, that's where everyone's at that has a chance. I think we're one of the teams, you know, obviously with Blake, that has a chance.
That's the sound of the horn. Welcome to an all-new Clipcast. I'm your host, Chris Wild. With me, as always, is the Jaguar.
Mike Jaglin. Huge, huge cast, huh?
It's a big Clipcast. We got a big announcement on a big Clipcast. And that opening theme song is a song by Eddie Money. It's called A Nice Night in L.A. Well, it may be a nice night in L.A. tonight, but it was not a nice night in Oakland last night, Jag.
Well, it was a nice night if you are a Warrior fan.
Which we are not.
No, we're not.
Jack, was that... Okay, so the Warriors swept us, whatever, who cares? It's only the regular season. They're obviously the best in the land. We get it, they're the defending champs. Was that the worst we've played them out of the four? Yeah, right?
I mean, by far it was.
Right?
I mean,
because we kind of hung in there for the first three, and then last night we got whooped a little.
And, you know, if you look at that game, the Clips won that first quarter.
Sure did.
And everything swung in that second quarter when, I believe it was 32-30 Clips. And then Harrison Barnes went out and did basically what he does to us, which is bury us at inopportune times. He did that in the first matchup, you know, in Oakland when the Clips had that lead. He was instrumental for that comeback. So they basically jumped at the Clips 39-32, but the Clips then, you know, it was a big three-pointer with, you know, Mr. Paul Pierce to make it a two-point game at the half. You're thinking, okay, we got a fighter shot.
Paul Pierce. But, you know who was huge last night? It was DeAndre Jordan, the big man in the center. Deej, Houston, we have a slam dunk. DeAndre Jordan... Wow, 19 points, 20 rebounds, 3 assists. That's a huge line versus the champs.
It's, you know, he gobbled them up. But the problem was Steph and Klay versus CP and JJ. 55 points to 22 points.
The Splash Brothers had a combined 65 points, but more importantly, some D-leaguer had 65 points solo. Who is this guy from the D-league who had 65 points?
Russ Smith.
Can Doc call him up? Don't we have a roster spot for Russ?
Let's find Russ Smith.
We could have used 65 last night. We could use 65 tonight versus D-Thrill and the Portland Trailblazers. Look, the Clippers are going to bounce back, get a W at home tonight versus Portland. It's been a real wonky schedule. Yeah, the Clips have fallen 5 out of their last 6, which is very un-Clipper these days, especially in 2016. 3 in a row, which we haven't done in the calendar year of 2016. We hadn't lost in consecutive games in the calendar year 2016. And all of a sudden, we lost 2 in a row, 1-1. Now we've lost 3 in a row. We've lost 5 out of 6. Jack, is this a little bit of, man, we really overperformed without Blake Griffin, and now kind of reality is setting in, and it's like, oh, man, we need big Blake back pronto.
I think it's a little bit of that. I also feel that, you know, looking at the big picture, they play down to the level of competition, and that's something we really saw in this road trip, especially with Memphis, who, you know, Zach Randolph comes back from an injury after missing, I believe, like 7 games.
Well, I disagree with that statement. We may have played down to the competition in Memphis and New Orleans, but this season we are certainly not playing down to competition because we are dominating less than teams. At least we were until the past, like, week and a half.
Yeah, and that's been, I would say, the past month and a half. And that was, you know, the biggest problem with not getting that 3 seed, which, you know, 2 weeks ago, seemed right in sight.
Sure.
And now it seems like a distant memory. And out of the top six teams in the league, Chris, the Clips are the worst against the top six. They're 2-12.
Yeah, in the regular season, Jack. How many teams have won a ring because of regular season wins? I'm just curious. In the history of the NBA.
None, but seeding does matter.
I know seeding does matter. I sure seeding matters. And size matters, Jack. I know. It all matters. But listen, the postseason is so close. I actually talked to Jamal Crawford. I went one-on-one with Jamal Crawford, and I talked to him. I'm like, how do you not obsess over the schedule and the standings? Because that's what we do, and I am obsessed over the schedule and the standings. I'm obsessed over the fact that we had five back-to-backs in a row. What kind of scheduling is that? And we're not done. We've still got the Blazers tonight at home, and then we've got back-to-back Sunday and Monday versus the Nugs and the Seas, which, by the way, I see a three-game home win streak to counteract this three-game home, excuse me, this three-game loss streak, away loss streak.
Why don't we clip ahead in a bit? But also, let's make sure, you know, let our listeners know that we like to go down by the rivers with Austin Rivers,
sure,
which we'll do in a future episode.
We like to paint a picture with Picasso. Jamal Crawford, we call him Picasso because the man gets on the court, the hardwood, and is an artist at basketball. He's not a basketball player. He's an artist. He's a pure scorer. And we paint a picture with Picasso, and that's Jamal Crawford. But the back-to-backs aren't done. I know we're not clipping ahead, but I'm talking about this schedule, Jack, because five back-to-backs in a row, including away back-to-backs make sense to me. Home back-to-backs make no sense to me, which is why we need our own arena. Because when we're playing at the Ballmer Sports Access Center, we're not playing back-to-backs at home because we're the only show in town. We have to play back-to-backs at home because there's a hockey team. There's a WNBA team. There's another NBA team. There's just all sorts of Taylor Swift concerts that we have to deal with.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that's not happening right now, Chris. And
no,
we have
isn't.
To stick with the back-to-back. So, you know, I know you want your Clipper dream ship, but, you know, hopefully Chuck can grant you your wish one day.
Biggest wingspan of the North American Birds is Chuck the Condor. All I'm saying is the biggest wingspan. And DeAndre Jordan had an impressive wingspan last night with 20 rebounds, 20 off the glass.
That, again, DeAndre is playing at a phenomenal level right now.
He has to.
But, again, March Madness has turned into March Sadness for the Clips.
March Madness has turned into March Sadness as we don't march into the playoffs. We're limping right now. But those back-to-backs versus the L-word couldn't come sooner. I'm looking forward to that. Look, we always finish the season strong. We've got still, you know, a lot of games left. Not a lot, but double digits games left to be played. We can still go out on like a nice win streak. I think last year we won 7 in a row going into the playoffs. We can certainly still accomplish that.
No, it's totally possible. April is set up really well. But
Dirty dozen left, Jack. A dirty dozen.
Again, this is not going to be easy. And the key is health. And again, at times, you know, what is this team's identity? You know, with Blake out, a lot of people earlier on were like, is this team better without Blake Griffin?
No,
we know that they're not better without Blake Griffin. But they were finding ways to win and kind of grinding it out in a really, like, epic way.
Sure.
That kind of, you know, you were thinking to yourself, okay, is this the way this team's going to win?
Well, we came back from All-Star break, and we beat the Spurs. We beat Oklahoma City Thunder. And those were huge W's versus elite teams that we needed and that we got without Big Blake. But like I said earlier, Jag, again, as you like to say, again, the Clippers' wheels are falling off the bus a little because they need Big Blake back, and reality is beginning to set in. That being said, with this dirty dozen games ahead, we could see Blake back. His hand is healed. Doc told me himself. He looked me in the eye and he said, Chris, his hand is healed. It's the quad. Is that a concern, Jack?
Yes, because we don't know when.
Huge concern.
Yes, we don't know when. But, hey, you know, let's get into this more. But we've got to paint a picture.
Oh, you want to go to Crawford because Jamal Crawford, literally the nicest man in all of sports. I go one-on-one with him. If you're a fan of ClipCast, it's always Oprah Jagfried, the Jaguar, going one-on-one, painting a picture with Picasso. Very rarely does the wild man paint a picture with Picasso. And I think this is a spectacular interview because, A, I'm my own biggest fan, and, B, I'm Jamal Crawford's biggest fan. So I'm excited to go tête-à-tête, head-to-head with Jamal and paint a picture with the artist that we call Picasso.
All right, Jamal. I know you probably the best of the team with not taking the highs too high, the lows too low. No. But isn't it hard, especially this late in the season, not to schedule watch, kind of obsess over the standings? How do you do it?
Well, I think because me being in the game for a while, it's really changed from day to day, from week to week. And you'll drive yourself crazy if you do that. You just have to continue to trek forward, trek in the right direction, you know, and continue to try to do the right things.
All right, what's on the playlist right now?
Ooh, I got J. Cole, I got Wale, I got Kendrick. I was just playing Biggie in there. I'm always big on 90s hip-hop, so.
Right.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty much where I'm at with it right now.
Are you binge-watching anything during your downtime?
Oh, the O.J. Simpson show.
Oh, yeah?
It's my favorite show. It's unbelievable.
Did you watch it?
I watch it every week.
Obviously, we know how it ends,
we know how it ends, but it's crazy because to actually, like, this isn't a reality show. Like, right. This is real life, and this is exactly how it went. So it's amazing to kind of watch that. Yeah. I remember reading about it and everything when I was a kid. I was living in L.A.
Now, you know, especially now with, like, social media and all the coverage that the NBA gets, people think they know what it's like almost, okay? Mm-hmm. When you started in the league, was there anything that surprised you about the NBA that you didn't see coming?
I guess sometimes they say you change, but it's the people that change around you. So I think that was the biggest surprise. People you could know for a long period of time kind of changing around you once, you know, things start to change for you, you reach a certain level, quote unquote. So that was probably the most surprising thing.
What kind of advice would you have for the young baller out there listening to the show right now who thinks he can get a shot, maybe go to a Division I college,
right,
and take his game to the next level? Do you have any advice for that guy?
Just to keep working, keep grinding, keep working hard. Don't let anybody deter you. There's always going to be doubters because most of the people have never done it before. They can't even fathom doing what you say you want to do. So just keep working hard and believe in God and give yourself the best opportunity.
What's your favorite away city? Your away arena?
New York, MSG, for sure.
The Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, for sure, no question. It's
talk to me about those New York fans.
Oh, they're unbelievable. They're very knowledgeable. Obviously, I think I have so many great memories there when Adam Sandler was there, or Heath Ledger was there when I scored 52, or Samuel Jackson talking to me across the court. So many great memories. So, yeah, they're knowledgeable.
You've been a Clipper for a while now.
Yeah.
Do you feel like we're getting a little more A-listy around courtside?
No question. I think, a lot of people obviously stay in L.A., stay in Hollywood, and I think we're a pretty high ticket. Obviously, we've been a pretty good team over the last few years, and we'll continue to try to trek in the right direction.
What I kind of like about the Knicks is whether they're good or bad,
the
you
fans
still
are always
get
there. Yeah. Yeah, it's always the playoff atmosphere, you know, and that's something you can't duplicate, and that's why you have to tip your hat to those fans.
What do you think has to happen for Clipper Nation to, like, get our arena kind of like a Madison Square Garden or...
time. Like, they have so much history and time.
Totally.
Yeah, I think we're definitely going that direction, but sometimes you can't change the best teacher's experience, and obviously they have the experience of having those fans there. Some of those, almost like the Lakers or the Cowboys in football,
right,
you know what I mean? Like, they've had fans for so long,
right,
so it's just... And the Celtics, they've had fans for so long that they just keep going.
How do your kids like Chuck the Condor?
They like him. They like him. I thought my daughter would be more scared, but she liked him, so that was cool.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so that was good.
And then how was your birthday?
It was good. We played a game, obviously, and we didn't win. But
that was rude.
That was rude. Rude in New Orleans, but other than that, it was good.
Any good presents or anything?
No, my wife cooked dinner last night, and the kids kind of helped, so that was good.
So that was your birthday party
at home? That was
my
birthday party at home, yeah.
And now, looking ahead to the summer, obviously you guys get your ring. That's pretty much
locked
in stone. Do you go to Seattle, the very next day?
Well, now I have to wait a little bit because my kids are in school.
Okay.
They leave out of school, I work out the next day. But once they leave out of school, then we're gone.
Then everybody goes
then
back.
We're gone. Yeah, we're out.
What are you most homesick for?
My family, I think, just family and friends, familiar faces you've seen over the last 20 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And then this summer, obviously, you always have your pro-am, right?
Yeah, for sure. No question.
What kind of tournament? Like, who usually comes and, like, talk
everybody.
To the fans about it?
It's obviously, we don't have an NBA team. I think the closest thing we have to the NBA is having our local pros play. They play every single weekend. Then I asked the kids who they want to see. They've asked for Kevin Durant. We brought him. Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, brought them. They asked for DeAndre. We got to get him there. But Kyrie Irving, Kobe Bryant came and watched. We've had so many people.
Right.
LaMarcus, I'm going blank right now. But John Wall, some of the biggest stars in the NBA. Man.
So you are like a Seattle guy. Like
yeah, no question. Like, no question.
How big was it for you to get Ballmer? Like, he's a Seattle
guy.
Yeah, you're
I knew
a Seattle
him before
guy.
This, actually. So I think it's pretty cool to have that relationship with your owner, knowing him as friends before he was, you know, working together.
Fast forward 20 years, mm-hmm. okay? You're now, like, out of the game. Do you see yourself coaching?
No, I think I would be more in the front office. Like, I like putting teams together. I feel like I know talent, so I would see
maybe
myself.
You, I mean, obviously Steve can't do it because he's got
he can't
own two teams.
I can help
could
him out.
Could you get a group of guys to get a team back in Seattle?
You never know.
Right?
Never know.
It could happen.
Could happen.
What do we talk about names? You go back to Sonics or you do something
Oh, yeah,
new?
The Sonics. Yeah. Original. Yeah, that's what I grew up on, so I have to be original.
All right, so I personally think Coach Crawford should coach the Sonics.
I coach my high school team. I stay there.
All right. Well, I like owner Crawford. Owner Crawford
that sounds
bad. Bringing the Sonics back to
GM
Seattle.
Crawford.
But first up, bring a championship to L.A.
Sounds good.
I like that Picasso, a.k.a. Jamal Crawford, told me that his favorite away arena was obviously MSG, Madison Square Garden, New York City, above the train station, Penn Station, in the greatest city on the East Coast, New York. The greatest city in the world, as we all know, is L.A. Jack, what's your favorite away city?
I'm actually going to go to the United Center, the house that Jordan built. I have not been to MSG, which I really want to go.
What?
No, have you?
Of course, I've seen the Clippers play the Knicks. I went when the Clips. I don't know. This is about like. I was a VJ at the time for Fuse. You ever watch the Fuse channel?
Yes.
I was a VJ, which is, they used to have this thing called music videos, okay? And music videos used to be played on this thing called cable television. Anyway, I was a VJ for a week.
And you would listen to CDs.
And I don't get your reference. And I don't want to see does. I'm not interested in seeing does. But I was a VJ in New York City across the street. Fuse was right across the street from Madison Square Garden. And guess who comes to town while the kid is a VJ? The Clips. So I put my, you know, finest Marcus Camby jersey on, or maybe it was a little bit earlier Clippers. Maybe it was a Lamar Odom first run with the Clippers jersey. And I go in there and wear a Clippers jersey and root for the away team. And I'll tell you what really impressed me with the Knicks, who's, by the way, not my favorite away city. But what impressed me with that fan base was the knowledge of basketball, and they were genuinely curious. Once I told them, look, I'm a Clippers season ticket holder, and this was back when we were, you know, a losing team, and we'd been losing for a handful of years before that 2006 sweet spot with Sam Cassell. They had all sorts of questions about the team, about the coach, about the bench, and they were just curious, and they wanted to pick my Clipper brain, and it was my pleasure to share my Clipper wisdom with them, which I do every week on Clipcast, every Thursday morning on clippers.com/clipcast. But my favorite arena, Jack, my favorite city, rather, my favorite away city is, are you sitting down? Because this might shock you.
Portland?
Arguably our greatest rivals, Memphis. I like me some Memphis barbecue, Beale Street Blues.
You've been there?
I've been to the city, but I've never seen a game. I've been to the Rose Garden in Portland. I like what they do up there. I've seen Utah Jazz play in Utah. I've seen Chicago play in the United Center. I've seen the Nets play in the old Brendan Byrne Arena. I've seen the Knicks and the Clips play in Madison Square Garden. I've seen the Clips play in the Rose Garden. But I've never seen a game in Memphis. But I love that city, Jack. I love Memphis, the city. I also like leaving it and coming home to L.A., a.k.a. civilization.
Well, that was a long walk. honestly, Chris, that might be the destination of the Clips' first round matchup.
I strongly disagree. I think it definitely will be the destination of the first round matchup. This is no mites. There's no mites. It is 100% going to be Clips Grizz first round.
And we know that, you know, the Clips are, you know, the rivals of the Grizzlies. Eric told us that on the last Clipcast. They do not.
They hate us.
They can't stand us.
But they also, the thing about Memphis, Jack, is they hate, as they say, everybody. There was a rally towel that said Memphis versus everybody. They despise everyone. But so the fact that we topped the list is a testament to these Clippers.
It really is. It really is. Now,
can I go back to last night's game, Jack? Could you imagine if anyone on the Clippers put on such a big stomping, pouty show that Draymond Green puts on? Like, could you imagine if Chris Paul acted like that, or DeAndre Jordan, or any of the Clippers? Wouldn't they be tossed? Wouldn't they be teed up?
Well, Chris Paul was teed up.
For doing what? Does anyone know? Did we ever find out?
Getting back to the game, because they did play a game, basically DJ thought he was fouled, and there was a whistle blown in the crowd, and DJ stops.
Crazy.
Thinks he's fouled. And they don't call foul. DJ ends up committing a foul. Chris Paul gets called for a technical.
Crazy. They're letting fans bring in whistles to the games up in Oakland?
I guess so.
We don't allow that kind of shenanigans at Staples.
Draymond Green does get away with a lot. He really does.
He moitalizes. He gets away with a lot. That kind of stuff. If Austin Rivers ever acted like Draymond Green after any play, he would literally get tossed.
If Cole Aldridge or Pablo Prigioni. I mean, let's be honest.
Prigioni, one day you're going to be a real boy. I love Pablo Prigioni. I want to see him more, Jack.
Pablo will be used when Pablo will be used. But
sure.
Again, you know, getting back to the Clippers and the Warriors, the bad thing about this is 0-4 this season. And again, they have not beaten the Dubs since Christmas of 2014.
That's right. That's not last Christmas. It was two Christmases ago. That's a ghost to Christmas past.
Yep. And so you don't have any, there really aren't any moral victories, you know, to the Dubs this season, and there are no victories. So if the Clips, and when the Clips see them in the second round.
Sure. If the Warriors get out of the first round versus Houston, their rivals.
Or Utah.
Sure, possibly.
So,
the Warriors are getting out of round one, and it looks like it's going to be a round one of 2 years ago rematch, Clippers-Warriors. What I like about this upcoming postseason, Jag, is that because we've been going to the postseason so regularly with this core four, with Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Chris Paul, J.J. Redick, and then, of course, sprinkle my man Picasso, a.k.a. Jamal Crawford, into the mix. With those strong five, we've just been such a playoff presence consistently. We're going to see teams that we've seen before, okay? We're going to go against Memphis. We're going to go against San Antonio. We're possibly going to go in San Antonio. We're going to go against Golden State. These are teams we've played, some of them, multiple times in the postseason. So there's going to be a beautiful story to unfold and continue in the Clipper lore. And can we get out of round two and into that Western Conference Finals? And who better to beat than the champs to get there? I mean, what better story would that be in all of sports?
It would probably be one of the biggest upsets in sports history. I mean, the Dubs have an opportunity and have a really good shot of taking down the Bulls record.
You know what's crazy, too, Jag, is that San Antonio is going to put up the most wins in franchise history.
Yep.
This season.
And they're undefeated. And they're currently undefeated at home. Both teams are undefeated at home.
Nobody's talking about them.
No. And, they beat the Dubs, last weekend. They are a force. They are the Spurs.
True.
And it's going to be interesting to see, where this all leads come playoff time. Because, we know the game slows down. You know, you see a team, basically for 2 weeks. You're not going to have those back-to-backs that have in the regular season.
I loathe back-to-backs, as mentioned earlier on the show.
Oh, you love them. You're in the back-to-back fan club.
I am. One, I've been in the back-to-back fan club back-to-back years. It's true.
No. But, you know, the game is different. And, you know, saying
that... You know who really helps when the pace slows down and we're playing postseason basketball? You know who really helps us?
Who?
Blake Griffin.
I know. I know.
And, Jack, and put on your... put on your... your Swami hat, you know what I'm saying? Look in your Jaxtradamus crystal ball. Can Blake Griffin get healthy finally with 4 games left in the regular season so that he actually plays in the postseason?
I do not know.
He's got to serve that 4-game suspension.
Yeah, I want to sit here and I want to say yes, but who knows?
Who knows?
Originally, it was supposed to be, you know, mid-March. And then... he looked great.
Right.
And then we heard it was the quad, but the hand's fine.
Hand's fine.
Now we know it is the quad. So we know it is the quad. Now
a quad is where you play frisbee golf in between class at college, right?
Exactly.
Now how do you injure that? That doesn't make any sense to me, Jack.
And then you go back to the dorm, and you never know what happens there. You know, this is something that he's been dealing with. So, I don't know. I don't know. And his health is, you know, huge for this team to succeed, because to beat the Dubs, you need to be able to pound it inside. And
yeah, well, I mean, Mr. Triple-Double in the postseason, big Blake Griffin.
And that's what the Clippers need.
Yeah.
And the Clippers need the old Blake.
And Deej needs help on the glass. When you get a triple-double, that means double-digit rebounds. And Deej needs... a second, dare I say, warrior alongside him, a second soldier pounding the glass and helping him out on rebounds.
I mean, I don't know what the stat is off the top of my head, but you have to think that Deej is probably getting like 40% of the team's rebounds.
Right.
I mean, I mean, we know that in some games it's been close to 50%. So I'm just saying that he's probably, you know, around that range. So, but... again, balance and slowing down Golden State, you know, is one thing you have to do. I mean, the Spurs showed that when they beat them last weekend. They were able to pound it inside. They were able to make it more of a half-court game. And, you know, the Dubs want you to play helter-skelter. They want to be able to get up and down and get shots, you know, when they want to get shots. But if you stick on Steph and, listen, you know, I know Steph went off, against the Clips last night, but, you know, historically, Chris Paul does a really good job with, one, defending him, but, two, getting into him. Typically, before last night's game, Chris drew 2 fouls on Steph in every game in the first quarter. So it shows you that, you know, there's something there. You know, executing it is a whole other story, but, you know, there are pieces of this puzzle, you know, that could be put together to take these guys down.
Well, you know what's going to help, Jag, is we just had 3 tough ones on the road. Now we're coming home for teams that aren't as good. So we got some home games, got some home cooking. Guys get to sleep in their own beds. But we just finished a little bit of a road trip here, and I think we need to check in on the road with Rowan Kavner, Clippers.com's own Rowan Kavner, and check in on the road with Rowan. You ready for it, Jack?
Let's do it.
Let's party, Rowan.
Thanks, guys, and not the best time to be checking in from the road. This team was kind of rolling along without Blake for a while, and it was a good story with how they were able to kind of just bounce back, but this was one of the toughest trips of the year. They go 1-4 on that trip. The Clippers have now lost 3 in a row. They've lost 5 of 6, 6 of 8, and 7 of 10, which at this point in the year, I don't think anyone would have thought. But then again, I don't think they would have thought they'd be without Blake this long. And if not for a win in Houston in which the Clippers led the whole way, it would be looking even a lot more bleak than it already is. You know, Doc was pretty critical of this team after the loss in Memphis, calling it a waste of time game, a waste of time practice leading up to that game, kind of critical of the team's effort in that one. That was a really shorthanded Grizzlies team that they saw, and on most nights they would have had enough to beat them, but didn't in Memphis. Had to fly the next night to New Orleans, lose that game to a shorthanded Pelicans team playing without Anthony Davis and Ryan Anderson, among others. And those were two bad losses that I'm sure they wish they could have had back, and their games that this Clippers team has normally won. Now, unlike Doc's tone in that Memphis game, he wasn't quite as critical after the New Orleans loss, saying he was pretty sure fatigue had to be involved in that. But the players were critical of themselves after that. They didn't want to blame fatigue. Some of them blamed just a lack of focus. J.J. Redick kind of talked about how the spirit just wasn't right. It's not great right now, and that you can kind of feel when that happens through the course of a season. And that's something they're going through right now. When you see a team as talented as the Clippers lose 5 of 6, I think that's inevitable. And, you know, before the season began, I'm sure you could have circled this five-game trip as one that was going to be the toughest of the year. And it turned out that way, going 1-4 on it. So Doc always talks about how he can tell what the ball movement's like based on JJ's numbers. I think you can kind of tell how the energy is based on DeAndre's. And DeAndre was rolling through February and March, had a couple down games in New Orleans and Memphis, then just went bonkers against Golden State, 19-20. He was huge in that one, kept the Clippers in the game. And now I'm reporting to you right after that Golden State game, which was a loss, which tends to happen for teams who go into Oracle Arena. They just couldn't hit shots in that one. I don't think it was really much else other than that. I mean, Stephen Curry and Klay Thompson both had more than 30 points, but they did a decent job on Steph. And then Klay just went going in the third quarter. And when Chris and JJ aren't going for the Clippers, there's just not a whole lot of places to turn right now. And obviously you can't talk about that without talking about the loss to Blake Griffin. And suddenly all the "they're better without Blake" talk has quickly vanished. The latest on that, and I would suggest you guys head to Clippers.com for the injury report on him. But Doc was asked if he was confident that Blake could get a couple games in before the regular season ends, and he said he is confident, but he can't really say with 100% confidence because he's not completely sure. And kind of the same goes for the playoffs right now, where he was asked to do the Clippers think they're going to get him back before the postseason, and he said right now that's not a worry, but again, he can't say anything with 100% certainty. This is still the leg injury that's been bothering Blake, and that's what kept him out after Christmas, after that December 25th game. So definitely a concern, definitely a worry. A lot of people have been asking about the suspension. It is 4 games, and some people say, well, if the hand's healthy, isn't that what he's being suspended for? Well, it's really just, it's the punishment more so than it is the injury. So it is whenever he's healthy, period, that's when it starts, whether it's regular season games, whether it's postseason games. And so obviously that's something kind of hanging over the Clippers' head. I'm sure it's something they're thinking about through all this, that maybe if they had Blake, it would be different. But fact is they don't. And really right now, unless Chris and DeAndre both have spectacular nights, it's going to be hard to beat these elite teams that they play, especially in the Western Conference. They've done a really good job up until this point of kind of hanging in there without Blake, but this is going to be a tough finish to the season, and they're hoping to kind of just get right back on track. They don't have much time to waste. After that Golden State game, they were right back home, landed in LA around 1 o'clock, and then they have to get ready for Portland the next night. And right now it's looking like Memphis would be the first round matchup, but if it's going to be another team, it would probably be Portland. On to some more fun news. Those were five of the most fun cities I think you can go to on a five-game trip in the NBA. It started in San Antonio. That was a close game until the end when the starters got pulled and they kind of took advantage against the backups, and then went on to Houston. I am a Texas guy, so I know you guys are asking what are my favorite cities on the trip. I'm a little bit partial to Texas. I did grow up in Dallas, but I do have love for Texas. They went to Memphis, New Orleans, and San Francisco on that. So if I had to pick a favorite city on that trip, you know, I'd have to go New Orleans. I did go to LSU. I have a lot of friends still in that area. And I'm not talking about the Bourbon Street side of New Orleans, but they have some just really wonderful places uptown, just a lot of culture in that city. It's always going to be one of my favorites. And if you ever get a chance to go to Drago's or Clancy's or Commander's Palace or Koshan, they have just a million different restaurants you can try. And New Orleans isn't for everyone, but there's this feeling that I have going there. It's just really an amazing place. And then San Francisco has to be my favorite walking city in the NBA. I always try to make it down to Fisherman's Wharf if I can. Really great food, really fun city to go to. Me and Dan Wojcicki, who's a writer for the Orange County Register, ended up trying to go to this seafood place, but it was packed. And we ended up kind of just stumbling into this Italian restaurant. And we talked basketball with the owner there. He was bringing us out some of the best Italian food like I've ever had. It was an amazing experience. So if I have to rank those cities on that trip, I would go New Orleans, San Francisco, probably Houston, then San Antonio, then Memphis. And nothing against Memphis. I will eat fried chicken at Gus's and barbecue at Central and Rendezvous until I can keel over. But five really great cities, fun trip, at least off the court. On it, I'm sure the Clippers wish it could have gone a little better, and they'll have a chance to redeem themselves as they get down to the home stretch here. We're nearing 10 games left in the schedule. So big game against Portland here, a team they could potentially see in the first round. They're going to need to try to get back on track. And again, if DeAndre plays the way he does against Golden State, they're not going to lose a ton of games. And you have to assume Chris and JJ get their shooting back on track, because Chris has been phenomenal in February and March without Blake. So not a great time in the Clipper world right now, but you have to figure it can only go up from here. The teams don't get harder from here on out, so we'll see if they can get back on track.
Rowan Kavner, one of the best in the business. We're lucky to have him. We're lucky to have him on Clippers.com. We're lucky to have him on the show. Speaking of Clippers.com, Jaguar, we have, as I mentioned earlier in the show, some very big, exciting news for Clipcast. And no, it's not the fact that Oprah Jagfree sat down for a huge interview with Corey Maggette, former Clipper great Corey Maggette, which I can't wait for. I cannot wait. Corey Maggette is one of my favorites, number 50 in the playbook, but number one in your hearts. I cannot wait to hear this interview with you and Corey Maggette.
It's phenomenal. Corey was unreal. He really was. And it was great just talking to Corey about his entire journey, you know, from Duke and to being a Clipper. And now covering the Clippers.
Crazy.
For Fox Sports.
So a lot of Dukies. It's great. A lot of Dukies in Clipper history.
And the, you know, info that he gives me on basically, you know, he and Elton Brand and William Avery all left after their freshman year.
Right.
And that was the first time, like, any player has left Duke early.
Right.
So it just... You have to listen to that interview. Great stuff from Corey. And this guy was a big part of the Clipper organization for many years.
I mean, look at the all-time leaders in a ton of stats for the Clipper franchise, and Corey Maggette's top five in multiple
stats. And he was one of the best in the business in getting the free throw line. One of the best.
And my wife turns into a preteen anytime she sees him. She turns into a puddle of nerves and crushes. I went to some Clippers celebrity bowling thing and introduced Jamal Crawford to my wife, who was it was great. Jamal Crawford hugged my wife. It like made her life. But I am telling you, she has a girlhood schoolyard crush on Corey Maggette. She touched his shoulder. I'm like, would you, wifey, stop. Stop touching Corey. And she would literally look at him and go, hi, Corey. Like, she was literally, I've never seen her like it. She was like a little puppy dog. Jack, I had to go get her spayed and neutered, Jack.
Oh, boy.
All right, so the big news is not this epic interview that's coming up in mere moments. Why don't you share with Clipper Nation, Clipcast's big news, Jaguar, because this is your baby. This is your baby, Clipcast, that you started years and years and years ago. Because you were sick of all the L-word talk in L.A., and there was no talk of Clippers. So you started this podcast, and you asked me to join you, and I joined on your ship. So please share the great Clipcast news with Clipper Nation.
It is not any news on Blake Griffin. It is that we are on Clippers.com.
Officially. Clipcast,
officially.
We are officially the unofficial Clippers podcast.
And who is it for? The fans.
For fans, by fans. We are the official, unofficial Clippers podcast. Can be heard every week on clippers.com/Clipcast. I mean, available every day, every minute, in every city, in every country of the world. We're available right now, beaming throughout the galaxies, Jaguar.
Fresh episode every Thursday. And as you, as a lot of people have seen, the new logo, we love it. Unbelievable.
It's hot. It's the hotness.
We've got a new page.
I look at the new logo like my wife looks at Corey Maggette. I love it.
People are telling me we need to get T-shirts made. I'm pitching to the clips. Why don't we shoot some of those off with the T-shirt gun?
Well, wifey can make hats. Wifey can make Clipcast hats. That is a reality. We can start doling out Clipcast hats, and I know the fans would love it.
Well, we got to talk to the team first before we're, doling out the hats.
Forget about T-shirts and hats. I know what you want, Jaguar.
What's that?
Clippers polo. You want that Clippers logo, black polo. Yeah.
That's why I started this. Just for that Clippers polo. I do love that Clippers polo. But it's great. It's unbelievable. You know, we've had a great relationship with the organization.
Absolutely.
It's
been an honor and a privilege being a Clipper fan for, I've been a Clipper season ticket holder, Jag, since Corey Maggette, and Elton Brand and Quentin Richardson and Lamar Odom got Andre Miller, and he was going to be the missing piece. That was my first season back in 2002. And it's been my great privilege and honor to be a Clipper fan and a member of Clipper Nation since my first game with Darius Miles when they were running and gunning in 2001. For the fact that, cut to 15, 16 years later, here we are on Clippers.com/Clipcast as the official unofficial Clippers podcast. It's a dream come true, man. And I know Clipper fans deserve it. They deserve a show where it's all Clipper talk all the time, available on all platforms, and they've got it. So I just hope we do you fans a service. I hope you love the show. Holler at us at LA Clipcast on Twitter because we respond back. We reply. We love you guys, and we hope you love us, man.
Yeah, and it's because of the fans that we were able to build. And we kept on.
You know why I fell in love with this team? Because the team. I loved the players, that young group that I was talking about with Maggette and Quentin Richardson and Elton Brand and Lamar Odom. And you know what else I loved? The fans. You go to these games and you're rooting your face off with other members of Clipper Nation, and they're just the best fans in the business. I know it can be frustrating sometimes when you go to a home game versus Boston and they're coming up, okay? Boston has a lot of transplants that come out here, so they show up and root for their team. But man, when you are sitting there rooting for the Clippers with your fellow Clipper Nation, it's just the best feeling in the world. And we're not ashamed of our fans. We light up the arena, the house seats. You can see your neighbor. You can see, if you're sitting in section 205, I can see who's over there in 216. I can see those Looney Tunes in section 114. I can see everybody up in the 300s and in the premier seats. I love Clipper Nation. We're the best, coolest, most fun fans. We have a blast at these games. And yeah, my favorite away city might be Memphis. And maybe my favorite away arena might be Madison Square Garden. But my home is Staples Center. And I love that building for Clippers games.
And again, Steve Ballmer is doing a great job of creating that atmosphere.
Unbelievable. That's why I can't wait for the new stadium that he builds.
Bringing Chuck into the fold was great. I think, doing the bracelets this season.
Genius.
Was a great touch. So the sky's the limit, for Clipper Nation and to see where this organization goes.
And the sky's the limit with Clipcast, especially when you sit down with Corey Maggette, former Clipper great, in a segment we call Clipper Hall of Fame.
Clipper Hall of Fame. This is, unbelievable opportunity to talk to somebody that has really kind of gone through it. And now, if you look at it, you have Doc, who used to play for the Clippers.
Right.
Cassell, who's a coach,
used to play. For the Clippers.
And now Corey, who used to play, is now one of the analysts.
Mike Smith used to play for the Clippers.
And Mike Smith. So it's all coming Clip Circle. So, but it was, again, great to talk to Mr. Maggette.
Let's roll the tape.
Mr. Corey Maggette. Corey, it's great to have you on. Thank you.
Oh, Mike, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Now, what is one thing, it could be a hobby, it could be like some pet peeve that Corey Maggette has that no one really knows?
A hobby of mine?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I love playing 2K, 2K16. Me and my son usually try to play it every night. And so, you know, we go through this where we're trying to create players and who has the best player. And that would probably be my only thing right now. And I love to bowl. Bowling is another one. I enjoy bowling.
Do you, is Chris Paul taking in any of his leagues?
I haven't. You know what? And it's the funny thing about it. I actually talked to Chris after he had his bowling that, you know, hey, man, you got to start getting me involved in your bowling. You know, don't be scared to lose now. And so I'm pretty sure next year I'd definitely be at his bowling event.
Now, when you were playing, did you always plan to go into broadcasting afterwards?
No, I just, you know what, I just really wanted to just maximize myself in any field. If it was something as far as in coaching, if it was something in the media, broadcasting, it was something working at the Lee offices, I just wanted to take advantage of all the different programs that, you know, not just the NBA, but the NBA Players Association provided, you know, for players. Because at the end of the day, man, you know, you can't play basketball forever. And so you got to try to start a plan. And, you know, as far as with the broadcasting, I think, you know, some people that kind of pushed me in the right direction, Ralph Lawler was a guy that actually, he's the one, the main guy that got me into broadcasting. Then Sarah Takata, who's the senior vice president, producer with Fox, she was the one who kind of started me doing like the old Maggette show, you know, when I was playing. So from there, it was kind of like the ground roots part of it there. And look at me today, I'm doing it now.
It's really funny that you mentioned that. You started the grassroots effort and kind of laying the foundation, kind of like what J.J. Redick's doing with his podcast now, too.
Oh, well, man, J.J.'s going to be a coach. He's not going to be is he trying to be a commentator?
Well, he's doing a pretty good job of starting that career.
Yeah, well, listen, I call him Coach Redick. I think he has one thing about him, man. He is so intense, and he loves the game, man. He really sees the basketball game through a coach's lens, which is really cool. I really got to check out his podcast because I've actually been hearing good things about it as well.
It's phenomenal, especially the second one with Jamal Crawford and Steve Nash. Unreal.
Oh.
You'll love it. Now, it is March Madness, and, you know, Duke is in the mix. Now, you played on, I think, arguably one of the greatest teams never to win a national championship.
Yes, I agree.
Was that loss that year more difficult than the Clippers in 2006?
Yeah, you know what? I got to put both of them was tough. I would say for me, you know, when I started playing basketball in seventh grade, the next year I won AAU Nationals, which was this huge ceremony. If you know, it's similar to kind of winning, like, you know, the NCAA championship or you know, the championship with the NBA. It's that big. And in high school, you know, we won our conference, and then we ended up losing it, going down to state. And then you go where to college, where you have this, you know, unforgettable season where, you know, we lost our second game against Cincinnati at the Alaskan Shootout. And then from there, I think we won almost 30 games in a row until we lost in the championship game against UConn. And, man, that hurt because, you know, we had such a good team. We had a great core of guys. And we should have won that game. Just so happens, you know, not taking anything from UConn. I think UConn had an unbelievable team with Richard Hamilton, Jake Bosco, they had a few other guys that cleared out of me. But, man, that really still stings me because, you know, you look back, you know, over the last 10 years of, you know, Duke winning championships, you know, it wasn't that they had this flawless team like we had. You know, they had ups and downs. I mean, you would have never expected them to win it, and then all of a sudden they won it. You know, so I kind of look back and miss that missed opportunity that we should have had that year.
You were like that class too was basically Coach K's first like one and done type players with yourself and Elton and and Avery. Do you wish that you guys would have went at it one more season? I mean, I know that Shane stuck around.
Well, you know, honestly, in my position, I can only talk about me, not you know, Elton and Will. But I kind of never expected that I would have left early. First of all, Duke had never had any player in the history of basketball or in their program to ever leave early. And so me, Elton, and Will Avery, even we was the first people in history to ever leave that school. And I would say, you know, for me and Will in particular, you know, Elton was player of the year. We still got, you know, we got a lot of backlash because of that, because, you know, no one was supposed to leave Coach K. You know, it was just this, you know, I don't know if it was something like in a good book that you, that was never supposed to happen with the Duke program. You know, so we took a lot of heat, you know, because of that. And you know, I guess through that process too, you know, we was the guys that kind of led the front for other guys to ever be able to leave. But also, you know, that too, you know, Coach K, I think he did, you know, a fantastic job of evolving as a coach. You know, he knew that it was time the guys will have to leave early, and he evolved as a coach. And, you know, Shane Battier, we had, you know, Trajan Lane and Chris Carwell, Nate James, Chris Burgess, I mean, Elton, myself, you know, Will. I mean, we had, you know, unbelievable team that year. You know, it just so happens, you know, me, Elton, and Will was the guys that leave. And, you know, Shane could have left, you know, that year. I mean, he would probably been projected still a lottery pick as well. But, you know, we was guys, I guess we was just the guys to kind of start the trend for guys to leave early at Duke.
And that just shows you how great of a coach Mike Krzyzewski is. I mean, one of the problems that a lot of people have, you know, with technology or media in general is evolving with the times. But Coach mm-hmm. K just keeps on going and keeps on building.
You know what? I would say early on, you know, I know Coach K was kind of pissed that we left, you know, left early. And, you know, for some point, you know, through that period of the last, I don't know, 10 years, we was kind of like the black sheep of the people who left. But I think in that process, when other guys start to leave, you know, from, you know, Mike Dunleavy, from Jay Williams, from Chris Burgess, from Lou Aldane, from Kyrie Irving, from Carlos Boozer, you know, these guys, so forth and so forth. You know, we was able to not only change what, you know, I guess the culture of Duke, but also it was an opportunity for Coach K to change. And he's seen that process. And in this league, in college or in the pros, in order to be a good coach, in my eyes, you have to learn and you have to listen and you have to evolve as a coach. You cannot, it can't be just your way or the highway. And I think for Coach K, he understood that. And that's the difference in a Hall of Famer coach that he is, that he will be. The Greg Popovich, the Doc Rivers of the world. I mean, these guys learn to evolve as coaches. And he did that. And not only he did that, he started to condone more guys to leave, and he was, you know, able to get behind them. But also, you know, doing, you know, USAB was another opportunity for him to coach the best players in the world. And, you know, to, you know, take on those, you know, high character guys and high egos. And he learned to deal with it. And those guys responded. And I think that was also a building block for Coach K in how his process and how he evolved as a coach.
Now, one of the things I don't know if a lot of people notice or realize, Doc Rivers actually drafted you,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yes, he did.
And you played one season with him before leaving to go to the Clippers. Now, what mm-hmm. was it? I mean, that was that Doc's first year as a coach?
Yeah, that was Doc's first year as a coach. And the cool thing about it, you know, Doc stayed right down the street from us. So, you know, basically, you know, he was a family friend. Both of our families knew each other. And, you know, even when I got traded to the Clippers, at that time, I was pissed. I was pissed at Doc. You know, I told him, I was like, "Hey man, when I come back, I'm trying to kill you guys." You know, but that year too, you know, for Doc's first year, he did an unbelievable job, man, for us, the talent we had. You know, most people don't know that year he had Chauncey Billups on our team. Chauncey Billups didn't even play. We had Darrell Armstrong, Derrick Strong, Bo Outlaw, Tariq Abdul. Tariq Abdul-Wahad at that time. I mean, we had a variety of other guys on that team. But for caliber-wise, we should have never been in a position. We went 41-41 a year. And the game that we lost to, you know, late in the game with a big shot by Ray Allen, I never forget, you know, that was where, you know, he won Coach of the Year that year because it was a team that wasn't supposed to excel. And he found a way to empower the guys and actually to have guys trust him as a coach, you know, because this, don't forget, you know, Doc was in commentating a little bit and as a player. So it's a trust factor for players to trust not just the player that they, you know, the player they used to play, but now trust him as a coach. And he did a fantastic job of getting guys behind him to do that.
Now, when you made it to the Clippers, you had this young core. It's arguably one of the most talented young cores, probably the most talented young core, I'll just say that, to never make the playoffs.
Yeah.
How talented was that team, and that what could have been with that team?
Well, I tell you this. We had two different starting lineups. I mean, you think about it, we had Quinn Richardson, we had Keon Doolin, we had Lamar Odom, we had Darius Miles. Coming off that, we still had Eric Pyakowski, who was a sharpshooter, Tyrone Nesby at the time. You know, at one point, you know, the following year, then we got Elton Brand as well. I mean, it was, when I talk about our practices were so competitive, and I think, you know, Alvin Gentry, you know, he had a tough job, man, because he had to try to figure out and place everything together. You know, for players. And then also, we all guys that's under 22 years of age, actually under 20 years of age at that time. And we was all excited. You know, we all could run. We all could jump. You know, we all wanted to play no matter what, no matter how much we lost. We still wanted to go out there and play. And I would say for me, Q, and Darius Miles in particular, you know, he had a Chicago connection. You know, I grew up with Quinn Richardson and Darius Miles. So, you know, we played since we was in eighth and ninth grade. You know, I played against him in high school. I played against grade school, high school, you know, college, and the pros. And now he was, you know, now he was a teammate of mine again. And so it was a bond. It was guys that always wanted to compete. You know, it was a toughness. It was an arrogance that we had as players. But also, it was just fun, man. It was fun to be a part of that team, and it was fun to be around people that you know. And you see them excel. And we was all, the thing about it, even though we was competitive, we had our ups and downs, you know, guys might have got into it. You know, we all was pulling for each other to do well, you know, when we was on that team. You know, if one guy is not playing, you know, we got other guys stepping up, you know, bouncing, hey, man, he needs to play. He's the one, he's been working his tail off in practice. And it might be the same thing for the other guy. No, he needs to play. And it just shows the character that all the players had, and it showed also, you know, Alvin did the best job he can trying to handle all that talent at that time because we had a ton of talent. We were still young and dumb and still trying to figure out the game.
It's funny because Alvin Gentry today, with what he has become as a coach, you guys would have been unbelievable back then.
Yeah, and you look at what Alvin has done. I mean, great to say that, you know. Alvin went in a position where, you know, he kind of went off the radar. And then he got hired as assistant. And from there, he also had to, you know, kind of go back from the ground up to figure out him as a coach and figure out that, you know, he was better at, you know, giving offensive plays. He was an offensive coach even with the Phoenix Suns. And he did a fantastic job from there. And then going, you know, with the Clippers with Doc Rivers. And then going... you could just see, you know, him excelling each year and then going to Golden State Warriors last season and being an integral part into what they did, winning the championship. And so you look at if we would have had, you know, his knowledge, you know, then, I mean, now, back then, it would have been different. But also just think about if us as players, you know, if we was a little more mature, how much better we would have been.
Can you believe it's been 10 years since you're 2006 Clipper run.
Mm-hmm.
What's your greatest memory from that season?
Well, for me, you know, it was kind of bittersweet because it was in a position where, Early on, I mean, we had Sam Cassell, we had, you know, Ketino Mobley, and these guys came in and really, man, their leadership, their veteran leadership, their savvy, their integrity, they just brought so much to the table. And I never forget Sam Cassell, and you know, I love Sam. You know, he's probably one of my greatest teammates. And when he came in and said, "Hey, Corey, I want to talk to you." And he's like, "Hey, man, I know you've been a 20-point scorer in the last few years, but, man, at the end of the day, we have to win. We got to win basketball games. So it might be nights where you might get 10 to 15, but it's going to be a win. But it's going to be nights where you're going to get 20, 30, and we're going to win. But you have to accept that role. And I'm asking you as not just a man, but also as a teammate, you know, in order for our team to be better." And it was, man, it was a humbling experience for me where, you know, this is Sam Cassell, you know, at the time. And he came to me that way. And the same thing for, you know, Ketino on, you know, "Hey, Corey, there's some things that you need to work on. You can get better," because Ketino was already lead. And he was a predominant scorer, you know, 19-plus scorer with the Houston Rockets at that time. And so, I mean, I had these two good guys come in there, and everyone – Sam brought everyone together, everyone. Ketino brought everyone together. And we went out together, you know, and just our attitude for every individual, it showed why we won. And, you know, for me, I ended up getting hurt against the Miami Heat. And next thing you know, from at that point I was averaging 23 points a game, I get hurt. Then Elton, you know, he just goes on a tear. He picks up everything. And, you know, he was an all-star in a year. And then for me, when I came back, I came off the bench. You know, at that time, Dunleavy said, "Hey, we got to bring you off the bench." And at the end of, at that time, you know, I wasn't happy about coming off the bench. You know, this, and we had Quentin Ross at the time. And so it was a process. But with that process, it was something good because, I mean, we had an unbelievable first series against the Denver Nuggets, you know, where – you know, at that time, I led our team in scoring against that series, the next series, Elton Day. It was, you know, so it was a bittersweet for that because we were so close, man. I mean, we were so close. I think we just had, you know, mental errors. I can't say it's just coaching, but it was collectively we made mistakes that we shouldn't make that kind of cost us going into the second round. And but I think, man, you know, what Sam brought to the table, it's no reason why Doc Rivers has him on there because he knows how to talk to players, he knows how to get in the head of them, and he knows how to make them better, you know, and that's what I love about, you know, Sam Cassell, you know, that team in Ketino Mobley.
Can you beat Sam one-on-one today?
Can I beat Sam one-on-one? Yeah, I can beat Sam one-on-one. What kind of question is that?
Oh, well, hey, I wanted to know. I mean, he said he was a bulldog. I mean,
no.
Hey, listen. I mean, one of the questions I do want to ask you, did James Harden go to the Corey Maggette School of Getting the Line? Because, you loved going to the charity stripe. You found ways all the time.
Man, listen, James Harden is a way better player than me. But, you know, his skill level is unbelievable. What he has mastered is being able to get to the foul line. And I think, you know, it just wasn't, you know, me at that time, you know, found a trick to try to get fouls from the referees. You know, Paul Pierce was the originator of that. And most people don't understand it. Paul Pierce for years led the lead in free throws made and attempted. And so for me, you know, I studied Paul. Paul was another guy, you know, even when he was with the Boston Celtics all those years, he was a guy that was he's a California guy. So we played ball every single summer. And so I had a chance to work with Paul. I had a chance to kind of fellowship with Paul. And I used all those different things. And, you know, then after that, you know, when Grant Hill was out with the ankle injuries, I was able to work with Grant Hill a ton, man, in the summertime in Orlando when I had a home. And, you know, how to get to the basket, how to get contact. And, you know, I think James Harden has – you know, has did a great job of that. And another guy who I spent, you know, summers, you know, 5 or 6 summers working with, you know, with his shooting coach, Chris Farr, is DeMar DeRozan. And you can see right now, DeMar DeRozan is another guy that gets to the foul line. And we worked on that because, you know, sometimes you're going to have those bad shooting nights. And, you know, for them, I think, you know, DeMar as well as James are way better shooters than I. You know, my thing was getting to the basket. If I couldn't, I'm going to go to the foul line because I knew I was 80%. These guys are good shooters. So if you can combine good shooting or bad shooting and then going getting fouled to the foul line, you know, your chances of succeeding is really high. You can see, you know, from Paul, from James Harden, from DeMar DeRozan, these guys are really thriving.
You're back with Clipper Nation. How has the Clipper brand changed since your playing days?
Well, you know what? There's more excitement. And you know, it's when Donald was there, you know, one thing about it, I have nothing bad to say about, you know, Donald Sterling. You know, he always, my checks was always on time. And everyone knows who has been around the Clippers organization. Donald was kind of quirky. And, you know, basketball was just a hobby for him. And so.
He was a Mr. Burns of sports, is what I like to call him, you know.
You, Mr. what?
Mr. Burns from the Simpsons.
Yeah. But also, I have to give a little credit to what Donald did. Because Donald, you know, he brought Doc in. And bringing Doc in, he actually started to change, you know, the culture of what the Clippers was about. You know, you've seen it. You know, they went to the playoffs because of, you know, he started to make changes. He started to pay players. You know, he started to commit to the Clippers. You know, he got a practice facility up that we never had in my entire career I was there. So he actually started. But then also, in that process, they brought a man in Steve Ballmer who is a diehard basketball fan. And for him to come in as well as Gillian Zucker, and how they have changed the faces of the organization, how they've changed the culture of the organization, I mean, it's been, you know, unbelievable. And they have welcomed everyone with open arms. And, you know, I think, you know, for what this Clippers team is doing now, it only could get better. And I think at the end of the day, it starts from the top. And Steve Ballmer and Gillian Zucker and Doc Rivers, you have three class act people who, what the first common goal is to win, and the second common goal is to maximize everything they can do for the players, not just, you know, get them on the court, but far as health wise, far as, you know, promoting the fans, as far as promoting, you know, the players, they have did an unbelievable job of surrounding, you know, good people around good people to make them great people.
No, they really have. And you can, I mean, you can just tell everything that they're doing is to create a culture, you know,
everything.
culture that really wasn't there before.
It wasn't. You know, I kind of talk about the mascot. I think it's kind of hideous sometimes when I look at the mascot. What's the name, Chuck?
Chuck the Condor.
But also, you know what, you know, because, you know, you worth $1 billion. You can put out any mascot you want. But what he did was, he gave a chance for the fans, but it's not just the fans, but it's also the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, that is for the kids. It's not just for the fans, for the adults. It's for the kids because, you know, basketball is a family atmosphere. And I think he has done a great job of utilizing all those different things from, you know, the light show, you know, before the game start, you know, what happens on the court. I mean, all this stuff, man. I mean, I've seen a person that has been a season ticket holder for, you know, 20 years. And they said the first time they started the light show and renewal of the court, when they did like all the different graphics on court with the video, oh my goodness, it's like the first time for me coming to the game, it was the most sensational thing I ever seen. You know, like, that's what they have brought. They have brought those old fans and they have gave them new life. And, man, it's unbelievable to see.
What are your realistic expectations for this team for the rest of the season?
Well, you know what? Realistically, I think the Clippers is going, they're going to get as far as they can get. Me saying that, you know, when you don't have your star player, when you don't have your player and Blake Griffin, it's hard for them, you know, to compete every single night. And not saying they can't because they've been doing a great job of getting it, but they need to be healthy in order for their team to excel to the next level.
Do you think, do you think that Blake will come back before the playoffs?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he'll come back before the playoffs. I think, when you will see Blake is probably right when the first series of playoffs start, honestly. That's just my personal opinion because he's still trying to heal, from the quad injury. And if most people don't know what a quad injury is, a quad injury that controls a lot. I mean, not just your walking, but your sitting, you're bending down, and now you have to, put an account as far as, movements, guys bumping and pushing you, coming off screens, running up and down the court, full speed, trying to tack to the basket. And for Blake, you want to try to be as healthy as possible. So if I was him, and if he's not right yet, I would wait until late April. If it's a possibility he comes back in April before the playoffs start, that would be great. But you want to get him to at least 95% now while you have the chance. Because at the end of the day, he's still got to have the four-game suspension in the first place. So still, he needs to heal. Because when it starts, when the playoffs start, they're going to need him more than ever for him to produce on the floor.
Well, especially if you're, matching up with Golden State in the second round. I mean,
yeah,
Blake is that player that can get to them, especially inside.
Exactly. But you need him for a guy who has a quad injury. You're playing a high, fast tempo team. So that's another thing you have to be worried about. As far as health wise for Blake.
Well, Corey, it's amazing again, everything has come full circle. You have yourself, Sam, Doc, all these pieces are now a part of Clipper Nation again. All three of you have been connected, and it's been an honor and great having you on the show.
Oh,
and,
man, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Just wanted to, again, thank you. And let's go Duke, too.
Yes, go. Let's get them.
No wonder my wife loves that guy. Great job, Jaguar. Thank you, Mr. Corey Maggette. And thank you, Rowan Kavner and Jamal Crawford, for contributing to the show. And thank you, the fans, for listening. And thank Mr. Eddie Money, who gave us our theme song. And we'll be playing that entire song, A Nice Night in L.A., at the tail end of the show, which I think is a great Clipper anthem. I love that rock and roll, Jaguar.
And there's going to be a good little tease at tonight's game, too.
That's right.
So, look forward to that.
Yeah, if you're going to the game in the Staples Center tonight, keep your eyes peeled on the Diamond Vision jumbo screen, because there will be a cool announcement for you Clipcast fans and you fans of the theme song. But let's take a look at our Clipper crystal balls in a segment we call Clip Ahead. Last season, Jag, you successfully predicted all of March. That's how you got the nickname Jagstradamus. I've never seen anything like it. Clipcast fans will be the first to tell you every season I predict that the Clippers go 82-0. Okay, I haven't been right yet. That doesn't mean I won't be right in the future. But man, when you predicted March last season, that was uncanny. But let's take a look at the week ahead and Clip Ahead. Put your Jagstradamus Swami wrap on your head and tell me what's going on when we play the Blazers tonight, the Nuggets on Easter Sunday, the Boston Celtics on Monday at home, and then the Timberwolves on Wednesday away, Jag. That's a four-game stint from now till the next Clipcast.
I'm going to go 3-1.
3-1. I like it.
3-1. 3-1. Part of me almost went 4-0, but I'm going to go 3-1. And by the way, we both really ate it last week. I mean,
that was the worst.
I think I went 2-1. You went 3-0. And we went 0-3. So, again, you don't want us, reading any palms or,
No, talk to the palm.
No, we're not doing that.
No,
we're not gonna read anyone. But
that was back before we were the official unofficial Clipper podcast.
Now we're putting it on the record.
Everything's different now, and I'm gonna go with 4-0 because who would we lose to? We're obviously going to win at home versus the Blazers, right? Because we need to rebound after last night versus the champs. So we always rebound well. Sure, yes, we've lost 5 out of 6, but that is unclipper of us. And I think at home, we are going to be angry. Chris Paul is going to be fired up. JJ Redick didn't shoot well last night. He's going to come back and shoot well at home. I like us versus the Blazers. And then obviously, Nuggets, Celtics. Like, they're not gimme games, but come on. We already beat the Nuggets. We already beat the Celtics. We're going to beat them again, both at home. We beat the Celtics in Boston. Am I wrong, Jag? Am I wrong? Did we not beat the Boston Celtics in Boston?
No, no. But that was one of the games. The Clips let slip away.
Wait, what? We lost in Boston?
Yes. That was the game before the All-Star break.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. No, now I've never been more sure that we're going to win because we lost in Boston. We got to win in L.A.
And Boston's a pretty good team.
They are a good team, but they've been slipping late, Jag. They've been slipping.
Yeah, they have. They don't have Jay Crowder. But I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and tell you they're going to lose here or there. I think it would most likely be Portland or Boston.
And the Nuggets did shock us and beat us at home, did they not, Jack?
Yes, they did. Another one of those ugly losses. And
there's
did.
No way they come into Staples and beat us twice in Staples.
No,
not humanly
no,
possible.
No, 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 no. And you know, during Easter Bunny Day? I mean, come on.
I'm bringing my whole family Easter Sunday. I can't wait. I'm going to be stuffed to the gills with chocolate bunnies. I'm going to foolishly teach my child to put all his eggs in one basket again this Easter. And then Wednesday,
he's got to get a picture with Chuck the Condor.
I know. I need a pic of the boy and Chuck. Wednesday versus the Wolves of Timberland. I just like that W, man.
That's another young team that beat the Clips last time. So I'm going 3-1. I hope it's 4-0, but I'm going 3-1.
I just know that we finish strong always, and I was premature in my strong finish call last week. But we are due. We've got a dirty dozen left. We always finish strong in those final 10 games.
And I love April. I really think that.
Oh my
April
gosh! That back to back versus the L word couldn't come soon enough.
That could be 7-0, probably 6-1.
The only game that kind of scares me is that Thursday in Thundertown. But like, wouldn't it just be
great? That's in March. That's still technically in March.
Yes. You're absolutely right. That's still in March. The next day is April Fool's Day. But wouldn't that be the ultimate fool to punk him in OKC, Jack?
That would be great. And I think that was the game we were all hoping that could kind of turn the table and
give
get
us that
three seed. But that's
April Fools. Well, look, we don't know the future. We're just making bold calls because these are bold times on the official, unofficial Clippers podcast. Are you ready to sound the horn and get that sweet, sweet Eddie Money, A Nice Night in L.A. song rocking?
Let's do it.
I'm exhausted, Jag. That's a lot of show we just put out.
That's a lot. Well, Clipper Nation deserves it.
I'm going to take a real quick nap before I sound the horn.
We love who they are. It's the Clippers. Mike?
Yes.
Oh, you ready to go?
Yep, you ready to go? I'll start you off right now.
Okay.